You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As the coronavirus crisis wears on, we are hearing from essential workers. And today we're going to the U.S. epicenter, New York City. Since the city reported its first case on March 1st, its health department has documented more than 186,000 cases, over 15,000 confirmed deaths. And then there are the evening cheers that erupt from windows in the city, paying respect to the doctors and nurses at shift change. What questions do you have for an ER physician who's battled through the worst of the pandemic in New York? We're at 800-642-1234. Dr. Kestrel Riopel is an emergency medicine physician in her residency at Maimonides Medical Center in Brooklyn. She hails from Oregon, Wisconsin, and is a graduate of the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Riopel, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Katie.
We're reaching you on your day off. You're making time for us on your day off. And I can only imagine that it must be so strange not being at your hospital today.
It's strange, but it's welcome. It's nice to have a little time to relax here.
How often do you get some time off?
Lately, more time off. In March and April, very little time off. So there's, you know, it ebbs and flows the amount of volume that we're seeing, and our schedule is always in flux. And there's a long list of backup physicians, and we kind of have to be ready to, you know, dedicate the next week to the hospital at any time. And then when things slow down, we, you know, get some last minute happy news that maybe we'll have most of the week off. And that's where I am this week. So
you've been working at your hospital, Maimonides, for 2 years in the ER. When did you first realize that this pandemic would overwhelm the health system in New York?
I think it was in, you know, late February, early March. I think it's the same time the rest of the country started thinking about it and talking about it. But I don't think at that point we knew that we would be, you know, the first hit and the hardest hit. I remember, you know, reading the news about the cases kind of cropping up in the suburbs of Seattle, out in Washington, and then a few cases in California, and not thinking that our city would be really any different than the rest of the country. But, you know, in mid-March, it started making itself more apparent. And then we really had to start revving up our efforts.
I just was looking at a picture of you intubating a patient. What is that like, you know, putting these patients on ventilators and the precautions that you have to take?
Good question. So if I can take a moment, I'd actually like to talk about that particular patient. That was in early March when, you know, we'd seen a couple of COVID patients at our hospital, but not a ton. We weren't yet in the swing of wearing a ton of PPE. We weren't wearing hoods to intubate. I don't know if many people know this, but intubating is kind of one of the most dangerous procedures you can do in terms of exposing yourself to the virus and inoculating, because of your kind of basically the whole point of intubation is to create a direct line of sight between your eyes and your face and the patient's trachea so that you know you're putting the tube in the right spot. And so it's very dangerous for that reason. And that patient I was intubating was, you know, a patient who came in with trouble breathing and looked to us like she probably had a really, really bad heart attack, and her heart just wasn't pumping. And that backloads a lot of fluid onto the lungs and makes it hard to breathe. But unfortunately, when we, you know, consulted the cardiology service and some other people in the hospital to try to get her the right care, coronavirus was very much on the brain, and there was a lot of fear that this patient may be COVID, and that's why she couldn't breathe. And so you know, the amount of PPE I'm wearing in that picture to intubate is not what you would see people using now in the COVID era, and it's kind of scary. But
yeah, I could see your hair, for instance. It was, you know, and now we don't see barely a piece of skin from people working with patients.
Exactly. So I think we probably would have gone about that differently had it been even a week later, you know. But that's just an example of how things in the ER have changed on a day-to-day basis. One day I'm wearing my old outfit and, you know, the next day it's a whole nother set of protection.
From what you're seeing, are ventilators an effective way to treat this illness?
They are when utilized for the right population of patients. So I know there's a lot of discussion about who to ventilate and when to ventilate and if ventilation is effective. And I think the main reason this is, you know, so contentious right now is because right off the bat, when the outbreak started, there were a lot of physicians and practitioners theorizing that aggressive early ventilation of everyone requiring more than a few liters of oxygen is the way to go. And then we saw, you know, really bad outcomes. And that's not to say, because we have no evidence that ventilation of COVID causes death or morbidity, but there's definitely a correlation, if not a causation. And so that's when we started thinking about this more. And there are certainly a lot of people out there with COVID illness that do need to be ventilated. And that's the only way to effectively and aggressively oxygenate their lungs, or what, you know, little functioning lung they have working at the peak of illness. But certainly there are other people that you can hold off. And it appears by using non-invasive measures, we have been able to avoid some intubations or some ventilators at our shop, which is really exciting news.
We're talking with Dr. Kestrel Riopelle, who grew up in Oregon, Wisconsin. She's now doing her residency at Maimonides Medical Center in Brooklyn. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Dr. Riopelle, the familiar symptoms of the coronavirus are the high fever, the flu-like symptoms, the loss of smell and taste. From your perspective as a physician, what is different about this virus from other illnesses?
First off, you know, we kind of have like a running joke at work that, you know, you can come in with literally any chief complaint and it ends up being coronavirus. I mean, you named the most common symptoms, but we have seen it all, honestly. You know, someone will come in with back pain and it'll be coronavirus, or kidney stone, it'll be coronavirus. I mean, it's just crazy. And I think what's going on there is just a whole systemic inflammatory response. And, you know, later on in the illness, your body's own immune response causing inflammation everywhere that could really, really lead to any sort of symptom or any organ system dysfunction. And that's not normally what you see with like the flu per se.
So it could do, you know, something different in every single patient, every single person, you might see something different.
Exactly. There are certainly common threads, you know, lung involvement is common. We're now seeing blood clotting is very common. So a lot of people coming in with clots in the legs or the lungs. But other than, you know, those few common threads, yeah, it's pretty much a wild card, which is frustrating.
We're talking with emergency medicine physician Kestrel Riopelle, talking about her work on the front lines of COVID-19 at her hospital in Brooklyn. Do you want to know what treatments have worked best for physicians fighting the coronavirus in New York City? Are you concerned that Wisconsin could see a similar surge? Be part of this with your questions, your situation at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in a minute with Dr. Riopelle right here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with a Wisconsin native, a physician working on the front lines caring for COVID patients in New York. Throughout the pandemic, New Yorkers, they've saluted healthcare professionals every evening at 7 with claps and shouts and lots of banging on whatever is handy. COVID-19 has ravaged New York. The cases in this state are twice as many as any other state in the country has reported. Are you a physician or clinician? Are you treating patients with COVID-19? What do you want to know from New York? Join in at 800-642-1234. We have emergency medicine physician Castrell Riopel, who is in her residency at a hospital in Brooklyn, and she stays with us. Dr. Riopel, you know, there have been so many aha moments here, and as bystanders of us who are not in healthcare, we're watching some pretty creative discoveries. Are there any tips or things that have occurred in your ER that were a discovery in a surge when you were experiencing a surge? Have there been aha moments?
Good question, Kate. The main one I can think of off the top of my head is when we kind of started experimentally proning all of our awake patients. And what proning means is having a patient lay on their belly instead of on their back. And that helps the back of the lungs that are normally, you know, full of virus and disease because they're gravity dependent. It helps them get oxygen better. And this is normally something before the COVID pandemic that would only be employed on the absolute sickest patients in the ICU on a ventilator. And we were having these patients with low oxygen levels in our ER that we were worried we were going to have to ventilate. And by a simple request of asking them to lay on their stomach, their oxygen would come up miraculously. And it's been it's not a cure, but it's been a really good temporizing measure to bridge some of these patients to further care without being put on a ventilator. And now, I mean, we started doing that, a couple months ago, and now it's just common. It's practice, standard practice for everyone that comes in.
Yeah. How many of your coworkers are contracting the coronavirus themselves, and what are you seeing out there?
Good question. So we're getting antibody testing at our hospital right now. So we all kind of sign up for our appointment and go get our blood drawn. And I think the latest numbers are we're somewhere around at least the frontline workers. I can only speak for, you know, my emergency department. We're somewhere around 15%. So, you know, people are getting sick. That's in contrast now to the data that was published a couple days ago for all of New York City, just, you know, the general population was coming in at 20% positive. So even though we are at much higher risk, this does go to show that PPE really, really does work. You know, if it weren't for PPE, I'm sure we'd be coming in at rates twice or three times the general population. So that it is reassuring in that sense.
Have you had enough personal protective equipment, all of the gowns and the masks that you need?
I have been fortunate enough at my hospital to have everything I need. We've been really good about acquiring, you know, more than you'd theoretically need, just to be safe. I know there are other hospitals in New York City that have struggled with that. And yeah, my heart goes out to them. And obviously, between hospitals, we're sharing as well as we can to try to, you know, after the initial scramble for PPE, to try to kind of even out the distribution.
I'm curious why you're getting antibody tests versus getting the test for the actual virus.
Right. Good question. So right now, there is not much one would be able to do with the result of their antibody test. And that is to say that we don't know how good the antibodies are against the virus yet. We don't know how long they protect against the virus, if it's for a couple months, a couple years. Usually for these kinds of seasonal viruses, it's a few years, or if it's for a lifetime, you know. And so if someone was positive or negative, it wouldn't really, it shouldn't change the way they act and protect themselves. The reason we're doing it right now is for the purpose of research and for you know, demographic studies and public health just to use for a variety of projects. And that's really why the employees are volunteering. Of course, some of us are just curious. But if you really did want to know if you're acutely infected, you should get the standard PCR test.
Yeah, it's interesting that your own employees are also involved in the study of something that you're so wanting to cure and to contain. How is morale right now among the staff?
It's good, actually. You know, there tend to be hard days because, you know, even though the majority of people with COVID are going to do well and going to survive, we see the sickest ones, and we spend the most time each shift with the sickest ones, and we'd spend our time making family calls to the ones who are doing poorly, and that can really bring things down. But I don't know, there's something about all going through the same thing at the same time that's really created a lot of bonding within the hospital. And I feel much closer now to my nurses and ancillary staff than I ever have before. And so many gracious businesses out here donating meals to us every day, and we're able to kind of share those together. And it's turned out well, actually. The morale is good.
We're talking with Wisconsin native Dr. Kestrel Riopel, who is in her emergency medical residency at Maimonides Medical Center in Brooklyn. Are you a physician or a nurse? What questions do you have for an ER doctor who has battled the worst of the pandemic? Still time to talk at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Riopel, what is death like for families because they can't be there?
Yeah, that's definitely the hardest part. I wish I could say what it's like for them, but I'm on one side of the phone and they're on the other, and it's devastating. Truly, the grace of some of the families I've talked about who are thanking us for our work in, you know, the midst of me telling them their loved one has passed away is just, it's truly, truly humbling. But yeah, it's really, really tough. I'm sure you can imagine in a normal situation, a family member who's present can see everything we're doing for their loved one, right? They know how bad it is, and they can see where there are tons of people in the room, and we're giving CPR and we're doing everything we can. And now in this situation, you know, they have to trust us, and we have to do our best to convey that every measure was taken, and they're truly grateful, which I appreciate.
I've been hearing about that it's your generation of physicians who are doing a lot of this caring for COVID-19 patients, physicians recently out of medical school. What do you think this will do to your career, your path as a physician?
I think that the training and the experience I'm getting here right now is something that is irreplaceable, and I would never get in another decade or in another location. And I'm really, really grateful for the experience. I feel that I can relate to these patients and families on another level than I was able to before. And I'm really grateful for that experience. But yeah, certainly it's not something I'm going to forget anytime soon. And I hope it only, you know, it only seems to so far be contributing to my education. So if there is a sliver of light, it's that, you know, I've learned a lot, and especially about humanity and interacting with people from this experience, not just about the medicine.
Is there any sense that the worst of this pandemic is behind you? What are you thinking about?
Oh, interesting question. I feel like we all kind of think it's too soon, and we don't want to get our hopes up. And definitely, you know, the hospital is still planning for multiple other waves, and we're still ordering extra supplies and, you know, planning as if it's not over. But there definitely is like a little sigh of relief in the air right now that's palpable. And And hopefully it sticks around.
Ruth from West Allis called, and she's a retired nurse, would like to know if you have others in your home, and if so, what kind of clothing change do you do, and what is your routine when you get home?
Oh, thanks, Ruth. That's a good question. So for me, I just live alone in an apartment, so I can't speak to that, but definitely have talked about it with many of my coworkers. And it seems like the consensus on what people try to do is, you know, wear a different outfit or set of scrubs during the commute. And then, you know, the outfit or the scrubs you wear at the hospital to take those off before you go home and, you know, throw them straight in the wash. But unfortunately, I can't really speak to that myself.
Dr. Riopel, thank you so much for your service and for joining us and taking the time.
Yeah, of course. Thanks, Kate.
Dr. Kestrel Riopel is an emergency medical doctor at Maimonides in Brooklyn, where she's been spending most of her time treating patients with the coronavirus, a native of Oregon, Wisconsin. Coming up, we get another perspective from New York as we talk with a Wisconsin nurse who spent 20 days in the ICU at Woodhull Medical Center in Brooklyn, where she too contracted the coronavirus. We talked to her from her home in Hayward, where she's recovering. That's right after this news update here on the Ideas Network.